And we now have with us Paula Poundstone, and she's going to be paying us a visit here to Manhattan very soon. Paula, a comedian and author, very well known across our nation, of course, and appreciate her coming all the way to the Midwest here to Manhattan. And I know, Paula, we look forward to having you here. You're well known. I know you recently wrote a book, a totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness. And I'm sure you'll be maybe mentioning that during your performance here. But tell us what your plans are for Manhattan, Kansas.
Well, I talk about raising a house full of kids and animals. I talk about trying to pay attention to the news well enough to cast a halfway decent vote. My favorite part of the night is just plain talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails. So the truth is, I don't always know what I'm talking about exactly. I just sort of go in the direction that that things take me. I've been at this for 38 years, so somewhere rattling around in my head, I have 38 years of material. But I don't have a clear path.
Well, improv, I know you're well known for too, and you know, being a broadcaster, we have to do a little bit of that ourselves now and again. But I know you come from Alabama. Was where you got your start. Why don't you tell us a bit why you're going to be asking people where they're from and what they do? Why don't you share with us? What would Paula Poundstone answer to that?
Well, I was born in Alabama, but I was raised in Massachusetts. I was lucky enough to be 19 years old in Boston, living in Boston in the spring of 1979. I was bussing cables for a living and by the way, doing a bang up job of it. But, a couple of guys started a stand-up comedy circuit in Boston, and I was there then and joined in. It was to some degree. I mean, I had always wanted to be a comic of some sort, but quite honestly, I had no idea what the route was to that at that point in my life. Sorry, I really was just lucky that started up around me at that time. The first sentence of the last paragraph of the summary letter written by my kindergarten teacher in May of 1965 says, I have enjoyed many of Paula's humorous comments about our activities. And so I had grown up, you know, wanting to be some sort of a comic performer. And then this stand-up thing was laid right in front of me, and I jumped in with both feet.
So were you the notorious class clown all the way through?
I suppose I was. I mean, I guess it depends who you ask. I mean, I think a lot of my classmates just found me annoying, but there it is.
Although, you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot of work involved to get to where you are today. I mean, I know you have a lot of fun in the process, I'm sure, but it took a lot of work and a lot of time to get to where you are.
Yeah, it does, actually. I mean, open mic nights are kind of college for a stand-up comic. That's how you learn how to be a stand-up comic. And of course, you have to be in cities that have, you know, open mic opportunities. And that's a night in the club where anybody who wants to can go. You know, there's a microphone, a sound system, and anybody who wants to can go up and tell jokes for 5 minutes. That's the premise of an open mic night. And in the time that I started out, obviously stand-up comedy has been around since we came out of the caves. There was a renewed interest in stand-up comedy that developed in the, you know, late 70s or early 80s. And the audiences were so much fun, and I was at an age where I could really stick and roll. You know, I mean, I didn't have kids, I didn't have pets, I could sleep on anybody's floor, and so I took a Greyhound bus around the country to see what clubs were like in different cities, and I ended up staying in San Francisco because I just loved the audiences there, and eventually I got to a road career, you know, going to, you know, getting paid to go for, back then it was, you know, 4 or 5 nights in one club at a time.
How many dates do you do a year now?
I think I do about 90, and that's largely because I love the TSA. just the excitement of going through the pat-down is what keeps me going back, really.
Now, you mentioned your animals. How many do you have?
I have 14 cats and 2 German Shepherd mixed dogs. A lot of times people make sort of a judgmental moan when I tell them I have 14 cats. And they often say to me, how did you get 14 cats? And I can tell you exactly how I got 14 cats, which is I had 16 and 2 died. So I've kept careful track.
Well, I know, and I have one cat and been traveling a fair amount this summer. She's not very happy right now with me and just all over me. I don't know how you do it with all your traveling. How do you manage to make do that way?
Yeah, well, I have a nanny for my animals. That helps. It's a tremendous amount of work, honestly. Sometimes I wonder how messed up I was when I didn't, it's not like I went out and got 14 cats all at once. It was a slow slide. But it is a lot. It's a constant cleaning project. I don't know. At the same time, I never have to waste time watching YouTube videos of cats. I have a constant YouTube video of cats going on right in front of me.
I imagine that's true. How has comedy changed in your 30 plus years, almost 40 years, or has it?
I don't know the answer to that, really. I will say, the only big sort of, sea change, that I have ever noticed, took place many years ago when even before I started out, which was from Robin Williams. Robin, there's any comic from my age and younger working, owes a debt of gratitude to Robin Williams, because in the late 70s, he reinvigorated audiences' interest in stand-up comedy. Almost single-handedly. It's not like there weren't other comics at the time. There were. But that frenetic energy that he had, one thing is he kind of did away with the segue. People don't, when you're telling a story, an audience didn't used to be able to sort of listen if you jumped around, so everything had this very sort of linear track. Robin, on the other hand, he would sort of go from this to that, to this to that. And people thought it was so funny that they sort of got used to taking in things that way, which helped, those of us who weren't that good writers to begin with. And also there was a feeling back then, he was such a whore for an audience, honestly, that he would go to, he would be performing at a 3,000 seat amphitheater in Cincinnati. And the same night, he would show up at 1 a.m. at Uncle Funny's Yuck House. He was insatiable in that way. And so there was there was almost a hum of excitement around the country that Robin Williams might stop in. And the truth is, he did.
Well, and, I think Robin Williams did teach us a lot, too, that, sometimes things aren't always what they appear to be. I know he's human, and I'm sure you are, too. I'm sure you're not always upbeat and everything going perfectly for you. Everything's funny. I don't know what you find in your own personal life, some of the challenges that you face as a comedian, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's distributed the same way it is to most people, For example, I'm a working parent, that balance between parenting and working, I struggle to, to find that balance the same as any other working parent, When you're off doing your job, you feel like, oh my gosh, I should be home taking care of the kids. And when you're home taking care of the kids, you think, oh my gosh, I should be doing my job. That sort of perpetual angst, that's the same in every job,
Tell us a bit about your book.
My book is a series of experiments doing things that I or other people thought would make me happy. Every chapter is written as an experiment. And the question for me wasn't whether I would enjoy doing something. The question was, what could I do that would, that would leave me with a little lasting bounce? Where you'd feel good when you stop doing whatever that activity was and you return to your responsibilities in your regular life. What buoyed you up during that experience? So every chapter is written as an experiment. It has the conditions and the hypothesis and hopefully the funniest field notes ever written, but the analysis part of each chapter is the story. It's me reporting back on how my life is going. The story of raising three kids in a house full of animals and being a stand-up comic and being stuck being me 24 hours a day. The book's number one job is to be funny. It's yet another memoir because I'm not dead yet, so I get to keep writing them. Its number one job is to be funny, and I kind of think it pulled it off. It's gotten terrific reviews, and the blurbs on the back. Really fun, nice comments from Lily Tomlin and Carl Reiner and Dick Van Dyke and Dick Cavett and Peter Sagal and Garrison Keillor. And so it got the best send-off I think any book has ever had.
Boy, that is impressive. And, you know, just as we get closer to wrapping up, any surprises along the way? I know you're great at improv, but do you ever get kind of surprised or just anything kind of stand out that way? And then also if you want to talk about some of your prouder moments, too, in your career.
Do you mean on stage?
Yes.
Well, let's see. I've had, of course, there have been medical moments. There have been times where something terrible happened to some audience member in the crowd. That always throws you a little bit. I happen to work to the nicest crowds in the entire world. And so somehow we sort of managed to muddle through despite like ambulances coming in and taking an individual out of the crowd. Somehow the show still goes on. We just do it really quietly so we're not bothering the medical procedure. That's happened more than once in my career. I've had the lights go out before, which I, by the way, relished. There was a theater I was at in Boston one time years ago when we had a blackout, and I begged them to let me continue the show, but the fire marshal wouldn't allow it. I thought it would have been great.
Well, and if you want to reflect, too, on some of your prouder moments and just some of the things that kind of stand out to you and all that you've done all these years.
Oh, you know, I consider myself a proud member of the endorphin production industry. I'm very lucky. I work in a job that is uplifting. It's just from a science point of view, laughter produces endorphins, and so I get that every night that I go to work, I experience that, and I get to bring it to other people. I mean, the truth is, and the other thing is, that people come out to be together as an audience to watch a show is so important. Now with all the electronic devices, people seem to believe that, you know, watching YouTube videos sometimes can replace a live theater experience. And it's great if people come to see me. That would be wonderful. I would really appreciate it, and I can guarantee you'll have a good time. But if not me, then somebody. You know, it's really important to go out and be, you know, just be with others. The laughter that one enjoys in a room full of other people, strangers or not, is qualitatively different than what you experience staring at a screen. I'm proud of the whole ball of wax. It is fun to do, and you just have the feeling, especially. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's been any time in history where people kick back and go, man, this is great, isn't it? I think there's always a feeling of struggle and sometimes peril. But it does feel that right now is a time where we really do need to, sharing ideas and laughing and enjoying one another.
Well, you've never been to Manhattan. Any, final thoughts before you come this way and things you'd say to the folks out there in Manhattan, what they're going to enjoy when they come and on September 8th on that Friday and just anything you're wanting to share with the Manhattan folks?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, I, um, don't know specifically what I'm going to talk about. I don't think I've ever been to Manhattan, Kansas, although I've been to Kansas before. You know, the truth is, I don't get to take in the area that I am very much at all. I'm pretty much, you know, off the plane to the hotel, from the hotel to the venue, and then I leave again long before any of my audience members wake up. I'm on a plane going someplace else. There are times I work places, and in the wintertime, it's very possible that I work someplace and it hasn't been light the entire time I was there, and that's not just Alaska. But as I said, I've been to Kansas before, and I look forward to going back.
Well, again, been a pleasure to talk a bit today with Paula Poundstone, of course, a very well-known comedian and author, and appreciate her sharing a few moments of her time.